So I'm going to be talking to you about something that's been in the news quite a bit lately. So hands up, everyone, who's heard of the Higgs boson? Okay, that's encouraging. So that's right. Just last summer, we announced the discovery of a new fundamental particle of nature. And this is pretty big news in physics. So Science magazine actually called this their breakthrough of the year. This photo here is of two of the theorists who predicted the existence of the particle over nearly 50 years ago. On the right is Peter Higgs, and on the left is François Engler. And this photo was taken when they announced the discovery of the particle. Funnily enough, this was actually the first time that these two had met. Oh, there's a cursor just on the screen. Okay. So, in particle physics, we're trying to answer the question, what is stuff around us made of, right? And this isn't a very new question. So a couple of hundred years ago, chemists knew that things were made of things called elements, so things like carbon, oxygen, or aluminium. And then from these basic elements, you can go and make anything in the universe, like water, or trees, or even us. In 1869, a guy called Mendeleev went and ordered those elements according to how they behaved in something called the periodic table, you've probably heard of. So in doing so, he had to leave a few gaps, which, as you can see, these were essentially predicting the existence of new elements, and those were later discovered. Okay, so this is how the periodic table looks today. Quite a few more now. Okay, so with the development of quantum mechanics in the early 20th century, we could understand the periodic table in terms of atoms and electrons filling shells around the atomic nucleus. So this was really important because it meant that we could finally understand the structure of the periodic table, whereas Mendeleev was just ordering things according to how he saw. However, it did open up a whole load of more questions. Are electrons, protons, and neutrons really fundamental? And why do they interact in the way that they do to form atoms? Okay, so I would say that this was when the area of particle physics was born, and it's exactly these kind of questions that we're trying to answer. So this took a lot of work, many decades of work, by experimentalists and theorists together, and they came up with something which we now call the Standard Model. This is our best understanding of what the universe is made of. So you can see that we still have electrons. They're fundamental, as far as we know. However, protons and neutrons are actually made of up and down quarks. Okay. There's also heavier versions of those particles, which you can see here, and a whole new family called neutrinos. And neutrinos are very difficult to spot, which is why it took us so long to find them. There's also particles associated with the forces of nature. So the force that you're probably most familiar with is gravity, right? But there's also forces of electromagnetism, one of radioactive decay, and another one to keep the atomic nucleus held together. Finally, there's the Higgs boson. This is really central to our theory, because without the Higgs boson, your particles don't have any mass. And without mass, you can't form the actual atoms that we know things are made of. Okay. So I've been asked to give you a demonstration of the Higgs mechanism right here in the lecture theatre. It's not an easy thing to do, but as I have such a sweet tooth, I've decided to try to do it using honey, which is here. So you can see on these two screens is just zoomed in on what I'm doing down here. Okay. So it's an everyday experience that heavy objects are more difficult to move, right? Keep that in mind as I drop this ball bearing into the honey. Okay, you can see it's moving pretty slowly. If the honey was invisible to us, it would look like this ball had slowed down all of its own accord, right? You might think that it had acquired a mass because it's suddenly become difficult to move. And the Higgs mechanism is very similar because that in the universe you have this Higgs field which is everywhere around us, but it's invisible. And particles are interacting with that and look like they've acquired a mass. Okay, the Higgs field also predicts a new particle called the Higgs boson. So if we can find that, then we understand how particles have acquired their mass. Okay, that's right. Okay, so the standard model was finalized in the early 1970s. And each of the particles that it predicted were found one by one. Lots of work for every single particle, but, you know, we found them. Except for the Higgs boson, that was still just waiting to be found. Where could it be? And that's how things stood when I started my PhD nearly 3 years ago now. Okay, so I've explained why we were looking for it, but there's still the question of why didn't we find it earlier? I mean, it took us 50 years. Why did it take so long? So there's a few different reasons. The first one can be understood in terms of Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared. So this equation is telling us that energy can be converted into mass and vice versa. So in particle physics, energy is like a currency. If you want to create a massive object like a Higgs boson, then you need a lot of energy to do that. So we achieve, we get to these high energies by using an accelerator called the Large Hadron Collider. This is based at CERN in Geneva. And yes, this is a Large Hadron Collider. It's 27 kilometers in circumference, and it's more than 100 meters underground. It's a cool place to work. Okay. So we use this accelerator to accelerate our protons until they're going at roughly 99.999% the speed of light. Then, when they have sufficient energy, we collide them in detectors at four points around the accelerator. Two of these detectors were responsible for the discovery of the Higgs last year, ATLAS and CMS. So when we collide them, they create new particles, the particles from the standard model that I just showed you. And those particles travel into our detectors, and we essentially take a snapshot of the event, and that's what you're seeing here. Okay, so one of the reasons it took us so long was energy, but another reason is that each time you collide those protons together, they're producing these particles from the standard model. Sometimes they produce a Higgs boson, but the probability of producing a Higgs boson is really, really tiny. So to illustrate that, we're colliding our protons about 40 million times every second at the Large Hadron Collider. That's a lot. Then after 2 years of running, we have roughly 1 quadrillion events. That's the number at the top, okay? This is the number of grains of sand that it would take to fill an Olympic-sized swimming pool, okay? It's a lot of sand. However, in those 2 years, we expect to produce, say, a few thousand Higgs events. That's like enough sand to cover your hand, maybe. If you painted those sand grains red, and then mix them into the swimming pool, start to get an appreciation of what we're trying to do. We're trying to find the red sand in that swimming pool, but it's mixed in the swimming pool. It's, well, it's a difficult task, and this is why it takes a long time. So, another reason that it took so long is that even once you've made your Higgs boson, it's a very unstable particle. Okay, it disappears immediately and it decays into other particles from the standard model. So you might be looking in your detector for two quarks, okay? And you're saying, I want to find a Higgs boson that's decayed to two quarks. So you look for two quarks, but how do you know that you haven't just found two quarks that have been made without a Higgs boson? Okay, this makes it really tough. In terms of the sand analogy, it's like our swimming pool is filled, the normal sand is now all different colors, multiple colors, and some of that sand in the swimming pool is red too. And our Higgs sand is just a slightly different shade of red. So even once you found the red sand, it's still difficult to know if you found a Higgs boson. It's tough, and it took 50 years. Okay. So I mentioned that the Higgs boson can decay to other particles from the standard model. Just a reminder of what those particles could be. Here's the standard model again. So one good way that you can search for the Higgs boson is where it decays to two photons. So I've kind of demonstrated this here. You've got your two photons coming in, like a huge collision, and we've produced our Higgs, and now it's decayed to two photons. And photons are just particles of light. Okay, this is really a great way to find a Higgs because you can measure those photons very accurately. and reconstruct the Higgs boson. And in doing so, you discover a bump, okay? A bump in your spectrum. And this is like, you know, what do you call it? When a lightning bolt, if you like. You've found the Higgs boson right there in your bump. What I personally work on is the Higgs boson decaying to two W bosons, okay? So these are the force carriers of the interaction responsible for radioactive decay. So last July, we took the results of all these different decay channels that we were looking in, combined all the results together, and we could finally say that with enough significance that we had found a new particle of nature. Since then, we've also been adding more information, we've taken more data, we've done more studies, and it's really looking like the Higgs boson that was predicted all those years ago. Now we're upgrading our accelerator, we're going to double the energy that it's operating at, and we're going to go and turn on in about 2 years' time and measure the Higgs boson even more precisely to show whether it is the one predicted 50 years ago or something more exotic. Okay, and that's the end of my talk.